When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I bet it feels pretty good to be Brazilian right now. These are the scenes as Brazil demolished South Korea in the first half and books a place in the quarterfinals of the World Cup. Hello, welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined here in the studio today by Ali Moreno, and of course the Brazil game is how we will start today's show. They were absolutely brilliant in the opening 45 minutes of this tie. Everybody contributing, everybody looking exceptional on the ball. And at 4-0 at halftime, the fixture, of course, done and dusted. South Korea would get one back, but the tournament favourites really impressing. Well, let's welcome in, shall we, Nader Manua and Gab Marcotti. How long have I worked with you, Nader? I can't still see your name. Nader's with us, as is Gab. Nader just wants to go home. It's his last day.
He's done. He's turned the page.
He's had enough. We'll be hearing from the guys in a moment. Ali, I just want to start with you. Without a doubt, that was the best performance we've seen, isn't it? That first half.
It's the best 45 minutes, certainly, that we have seen from Brazil, but I think it's the best 45 minutes that we have seen from anybody in this World Cup. And it's scary to think how good Brazil can be when given time and space in transition, and then these guys take over, and there's just options everywhere. Now, we've talked about it coming into the tournament, that there's a whole lot of options for Tite. It's one thing to talk about it, and then a completely different thing to actually seeing on the field the full display of all the options and everybody getting involved with passing, with moving, with dribbling, with crossing the ball, with finishing chances. The assist to Richarlison's goal after what was a beautiful play from Richarlison to begin with comes from Thiago Silva. Thiago Silva is now playing through balls. Everybody getting involved in the attack. The finish from Vinicius, and people may just say, well, he had time to bring the ball down. And what, the fact that he actually brings the ball down and just passes the ball, massages the ball into the back of the net, that would not have happened a year ago for Vinicius, but it's happening now. There is quality everywhere. Neymar coming back from injury. He's also looking good in transition. Paquetá getting involved in the attack. Rafinha, who did not score but was active throughout the course of the match. Everything and anything that you wanted to see from Brazil in this World Cup, we just saw in those 45 minutes. It was beautiful.
It was beautiful. It was special, Nader.
Yeah, it was very, very impressive. You know, that was a very special 45 minutes. And I think, for me, the performance I can think of that was a bit different. So that was maybe Spain against Costa Rica. And then we can say, well, it's only Costa Rica. But Costa Rica beat Japan, who beat Spain, and who beat Germany. So maybe it was actually an incredible performance overall, getting the 7-0. But anyway, I think for Brazil, you know, you can find some very clear positives. Good to see Neymar back out there. Now I was leaning towards Argentina should they meet in the semi-final, because I thought if Argentina have Messi but Brazil don't have Neymar, then I think I'd lean that way. But now that Neymar is back, you can see it's a big boost for the team. They really were very attacking today. And don't get me wrong, it's not the best version of South Korea that we've seen. And maybe, you know, they were significantly overmatched before the game even started. But I think for Brazil to send out that sort of performance and have the confidence that they have and to sort of give their fans something that they can really believe in, I think that makes a big difference when they then go into the next round.
Gab, I think I'm right in saying this is your 18th World Cup. And you know the pressure that is on Brazil going into these tournaments and the expectations that they have back at home. The way they played, I thought, especially, of course, in that first half, was like it was just a friendly on the beach. It was incredible.
Yeah, but I can assure you there is, I mean, people, there's often a misconception about Brazil because they're so talented and it's so easy and it's, you know, the friendly on the beach and whatever. But there is a ton of work that goes behind this, and I think you have to give a lot of credit to Chichi, their coach. You know, he's been there, since 2016, he treats them like a club side. They have this whole club side ethos to them, which I think is what helps them remain balanced when they go out and they play in these games and turn on these performances. They're comfortable. If there are egos, they're not dividing the dressing room. You know, there's a clear hierarchy. There are leaders there. It really is a perfect blend in terms of chemistry. And I think they're going to be very difficult to stop, whoever they play against.
The pick of the four goals has to be Richarlison's, doesn't it? Which starts with, do you want to see me juggling it?
Yeah, did it drop? No, okay.
And then obviously Marquinhos, Thiago Silva, and then Richarlison with the finish.
Yeah, well, you can take any of the goals and actually find some magic behind them. But yes, to your point, the combination there. And when we talk about Brazil and how successful they have been and impressive they have been in the attack, part of what makes them so impressive is the fact that they're willing to counter-press. As they lose the ball, that they're able to regain that possession of the ball very quickly, which is why Thiago Silva is in an advanced position, which is why Marquinhos is in an advanced position. Then Richarlison with individual skill, Thiago Silva able to find the through ball, and then Richarlison takes his time, finishes well. And at that point, we knew the game was over already, but at that point, it was sort of the culmination of, man, if this team gets going,
yes,
there's no stopping them.
Yeah.
If this is how they're playing, there is no stopping Brazil. I look at Brazil as the team with the highest ceiling in this tournament, and we saw that for 45 minutes. Now, sustaining that is going to be difficult. Now, obviously, the competition is going to get tougher as they advance, but that was some kind of performance offensively. Not only in the fact that they created chances, not only in the fact that they put away those opportunities, but also that counter-pressing that I'm talking about. The fact that late in the match, they're still chasing around, that you see Richarlison chasing people around, that you see a team that has a mindset of regaining possession of the ball very quickly, being on the front foot, parking themselves in the attacking half, and when there are moments to go in transition, these guys are running with the best of them, and they have all the talent in the world to finish the opportunities that they create.
What else caught the eye for you today, Nathan, from Brazil?
I think that is a good question. I think in regards to them having that first half the way they did today in terms of scoring those four goals, I think to talk about the other side of it, they scored three goals in their group. And as crazy as that may be, they were the lowest scorers in their group. I think defensively they only conceded one, and obviously that's a huge positive. But, you know, we get more excited by this sort of free-flowing Brazil. So to see them come out the way that they do, to be as attacking as they were and to be as clinical as they were, you know, for people who like XG, the XG was really high for this game. So I think that was what was that what that's what got me. You know, there was a sense of excitement and free-flowing nature. You know, the way they were playing, as I say, was it was really positive. I think there are lots of nations that I can name, England specifically, who want to see like a more attacking style of football. Well, you know, you see Brazil do that today, and as Ali was saying there, their ceiling there, you can see them drifting towards it. And if they do manage to hit that sort of level, I think he's right. They're going to be a very, very tough side to beat, because at the end of the day, they can either be defensively solid or they can go in a shootout. And in a shootout, you get the feeling they're going to score a ton more goals than you might.
Dancing. Some have taken umbrage to the celebrations, particularly for the third and fourth goal when the game was already gone, already done.
Right. Well, Brazil are dancing even before the game starts. I'll tell you, quick story time about Brazil. They had destroyed us in Venezuela 4-0 in a World Cup qualifier. Both teams are now on the tarmac of the local airport waiting for our charters because we needed to catch a flight for the next World Cup qualifier. Guess what they were doing? Dancing. So they dance before they win, they dance when they win, they dance after they score, they dance before they score. It's part of the culture. You don't like it, you don't have to watch it. I don't mind it. Guess what? They earn the right to celebrate the goal however they want to celebrate. If you don't want Brazil to dance, stop them from scoring. Good luck with that.
Nathan?
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, what people saying, like, you know, after you score, just apologize to the opposition. I'm really sorry that we scored against you. We will now jog back to the halfway line and we will not do that again. Like, don't be ridiculous. I think the way that they do dance, and as Ali just meant there, it's like, it's part of their culture as such, their footballing culture, just the culture in general. And that's them having fun. It's not disrespectful to the opposition. It's they've earned the right to celebrate by scoring goals. If you want to do something similar, score more goals, score some goals, and be creative with your celebrations. Do something different. I don't find it disrespectful. I find it essentially Brazilian. And I like it. It shows them sort of enjoying their football, enjoying being around each other. And, you know, instead of just moaning when something great happens, you know, they really celebrate it. And you can feel that from the outside. And obviously for South Korea, you'd be disappointed. But the best way to stop them dancing is to stop them scoring. So surely you go back to that football element, and at the end of the day, you know, you are the only person that can stop them. And if you can't do it, then let them dance.
Where do you stand on the dancing, Gab?
like the boys say, it doesn't bother me one bit. I think the dancing, the lightness, the fun thing, you know, that becomes an issue, that becomes a problem if it's not accompanied by discipline when they're actually playing. And there is a lot of discipline to this Brazil team. Let's not forget, you know, you've got this, the very talented front four, and then you have a guy in midfield like Lucas Paqueta, who is essentially a number 10. He's not a central midfielder. He doesn't play that deep, and yet you have it so you can have another baller on the pitch. Well, that means everybody else has to work that much harder. And what Ali said there, you know, about Rafinha running around, chasing players, working, you know, all of this, it adds up to a team that, you know, can be disciplined and can also enjoy those lighter moments, yep. But once they've earned them, by scoring.
Can we talk a little bit about the team spirit of Brazil? In a World Cup, or in any tournament for that matter, when you're around a team for as long as these guys will be, even did they end up making a run deep into the tournament, you sort of have to enjoy people's company, right? Because...
It's good that you never went to a World Cup.
I tell you, I was a great teammate. I was a fun teammate to be around. I may not be fun now, I was fun then. But the point being that Tite, one of the best things that he does with this great group of talent, with so much talent going around, is keeping everybody happy, keeping everybody part of the mix, part of the conversation. And it may not be a big deal to anybody, but I think for a team and the dynamics of a group, the fact that you're able to take Alisson out and put Weverton in, the third goalkeeper, so that everybody has played in this World Cup, it means something. It means something to the group. It means something to the guys that are now have been together and that are trying to achieve something together. It's a detail, but it's a detail that lets you see into the makeup of a group that is truly together. And if this is Brazil, truly together, playing for each other, enjoying each other's company and dancing, that means they're winning.
Are you surprised Neymar played as much as he did?
I was. I thought after halftime there was no need for him to be on the field. But I would also say that the second half was no more than a 5v2. It was no more than a training session for Brazil. So maybe it's just, hey, let him run around for a little while. And Neymar was one of the players that, in fact, in the second half were trying to slow things down and just play keep away for as long as he was out there. So I don't think that put a lot of strain on Neymar and his ankle. But had it been me, at halftime, I said, Neymar, come on down, let's hide this ankle and let's take care of it.
Was he thinking about the Pelé record? Do you think that was in his mind and that's why he stayed out and why Chiche didn't want to pick a fight?
No, I think you're looking...
Right, reading too much into it.
Reading too much into it because, as I said, Neymar was one of the players that was very willing to slow the pace of the game down in the second half. If he were thinking about breaking Pelé's record... Yeah. Look, let me tell you something. He would have been all over it and actually going in a back and forth like Rafinha. Rafinha was still trying to score, but he was one of the only few Brazilian players that was actually trying to do something offensively in the second half. Neymar didn't play a part in that.
Let's get more reaction, shall we? Alexis was at the game. How much of the 90 minutes were you dancing, Alexis?
Oh, Dan, I was dancing straight through that first half. Let me tell you, it was a fitting send-off for the last match that we're going to see at that stadium, the 974 Stadium, which pretty much stole the headlines because it is made entirely out of shipping containers. And what a match it was. Everybody was out of their seats in those first 45 minutes. I would say the stadium was probably 70% Brazil fans on either end, and then the other 30% was a mix of neutral fans as well as South Korea fans. But I think those neutral fans probably left now as Brazil fans. It was a perfect reminder of why so many of us across the world have fallen in love with the Brazilian style of football. The dancing, everybody absolutely loved it. You know, people were getting up and dancing in their seats. I had some really great seats. I was three rows up from the pitch, so I could pretty much see everything quite clearly. And the rows of Brazil fans that were in front of me, I mean, after a couple of the goals, they were turning around and they were looking at me with their hands on their head and their hands over their mouth, just saying, as Ali would say, absolute filth, but of the good variety. And once again, you just felt like now the doubts that people had about Brazil after the last match of the group stage, you know, just finally faded away. They reminded their fans, as Messi did with the Argentina fans, don't worry, trust in us. And then the fact that Neymar was back, he got the massive round of applause when they were reading out the team sheet names there. Every time he came to the side and attacked, he was just greeted with uproars of fans and everyone taking out their phone. And he loved it. He loved it so much that at the end of the match, he walked the length of the pitch just to applaud everybody. He was giving them the Gareth Bale hearts and just reminding them that he's here and he's prepared to do everything he can for the country. But it was unreal to watch, honestly. I mean, we get to see the likes of Vinny Jr. and Rodrigo Goes all the time, week in, week out, in La Liga, up close and personal. But the pace and the passing that they're able to do it, that joga bonito, the fact that they look like they were enjoying it too, it was just something else, you know. And everybody's asking which teams you should fear. Yesterday, Declan Rice said, you know, people should probably pay more attention to England and learn to fear them as well. And I think Brazil just reminded everyone, even with the substitutions, I know you're going to laugh at that one, but why they are probably now the most feared team of this tournament.
I don't think it's even a debate, is it, after what we saw today on top of some of the performances in the group stages, Alexis. What was really nice as well, the tribute we saw at the end of the game, of course, for Pelé.
Yeah, you know, Dan, and that's just one of many tributes that we actually have been seeing and that I have noticed at even other football matches too. You know, we got to see the USA against the Netherlands and there's a big tower across from that stadium and a couple of the buildings here in Qatar have been lit up with Pelé and his pictures and him and them saying, you know, get well soon. But in the crowd, they had a number of people, a number of Brazil fans with get well soon Pelé and a massive banner that they kept bringing up at one of the ends. Pretty much about every 20 minutes or so, and it was always met with a round of applause. Even, you know, the South Korea fans had their own. They had a face of Pelé with the South Korea flag because it's truly, he is a legend, you know, and it was sweet to see this morning too that he posted a picture from back in 1958 and he just wanted to use it to wish luck to this Brazilian team before this match, to tell him, look, he was able to carry his country's flag and live his dreams, and he has no doubt that they could do the same. And after to see the players do that, Rodrigo and I think Neymar came out after the match and said this win was for Pelé. We are all with him. And I think that, you know, could also be another factor, as if Brazil even needed any more motivation after the last couple of years that they've had in international tournaments to go out there, get to the final and win this World Cup.
Yeah, you feel that sentiment is going to grow and grow, isn't it, as this tournament continues. Alexis Nunes, as always, thank you very much for joining us. Well, we know, don't we, that Brazil will now face Croatia in the quarterfinals. And just a reminder, ESPN FC on ESPN Plus is presented by the all-new Honda CR-V Hybrid. It's on winter penalties in the end. It would be Japan who are openly scoring, Croatia getting the equaliser, and then extra time, nothing much happened, and then penalties would see Japan missed three of them, or have three of them saved. I'm sure Shaq would make sure that I'd say. Croatia then advanced to the quarterfinals. Gab, you were at that game. Take us through it.
Well, obviously, we saw Japan come out, take the lead, and you wondered, you know, do they have another win? Do they have another upset in them? It was the first time, actually, that we actually saw Japan playing with the lead, other than obviously, you know, when they came back into the game against against Germany and against Spain, and then Croatia getting the equalizer with Perisic. What really struck me about this is, we talk about Croatia, we give the whole, you know, band of brothers, patriotism, tough guy speech. We talk about Dalic, the coach, being so loyal to his veterans. Well, he made a very brave decision. He removed his veterans. He removed Kramaric. Then he removed Modric and Kovacic. Then he removed, later on, he removed Perisic, who scored the goal. Those were three of his penalty takers, and he put his trust in other guys, maybe lesser guys, if you like. I thought that was a really, really brave move for him. It's not something you often see in a World Cup. You know, when Modric went off, I thought, oh, my God, have I seen the last of Luka Modric in a World Cup? And yet, you know, there was, it worked out. I thought it was a brave decision, and it just kind of reinforces how, you know, after the game, he said, everybody always underestimates us, but, you know, we got something that the rest of the world does not have.
Looking at it, it was difficult to say who deserved this one, isn't it? It's
fair. Yeah, so I would say that early on, Japan were pressing high and they show a certain urgency. And you just imagine, well, this can only last for 20, 25 minutes because nobody can play like this for 90 minutes. And eventually Japan went back to just kind of absorbing pressure and then going on the counter and in transition, which then by the 10th or 15th minute, I was thinking to myself, this has extra time and penalties written all over, because both teams were very aware of what each other were trying to do. And I thought that Croatia were in trouble. Once Japan went up 1-0, I said, I don't know. I haven't seen Croatia create a whole lot. I haven't seen them really put passes together or control the pace of the game through Modric and Kovacic and find balls in behind. The couple of times that they were dangerous, it was because they were able to find some spaces. But then, to their credit, they made an adjustment. Instead of passing the ball around between Modric and Kovacic and trying to build through them and Brozovic, you know what? We're going to be a little bit more direct. We're going to put it out on the flank. We're going to find some crosses, and maybe we win a header. Perisic with a great header, 1-1, and then after 1-1, it was very unlikely that anybody was going to take a chance going forward and risk giving up a goal. Croatia wasn't going to do it. Japan wasn't going to do it. Eventually, we're going to penalties. And let me just tell you about the penalties. We have to stop with these little slow run-ups. Unless you're a big-timer, elite player in the world who has done this time and time again under pressure, stop the slow run-ups, because you think you can manage the moment and you don't quite understand what the World Cup is all about and that environment and how that changes your body. So all that confidence that you have with the slow run-ups, it all gets thrown out the window when you're about to take a penalty kick in a World Cup round of 16 match against Croatia, or against Japan for that matter. So Livakovic, the goalkeeper for Croatia, give him some credit. And let me highlight Livaja and the penalty he missed while hitting off the post. What in the world?
I know. That was...
I'm going to bring a name that is going
to... You got away with it.
I'm going to bring up a name that Gab is going to be a little bitter about.
Oh, no.
Zsa.
Right.
Huh? You remember the one with the high knees?
Yes.
Simpsons
bowling.
Yeah, well, okay, that worked out very well. Why are we doing these things in moments of high pressure? I do not understand.
Nate, I mean, I suppose it's easy to sit here, isn't it, and analyze. We're not on the pitch, we're not there, but you just think, just whack it.
Yeah, you would think that, but, you know, speaking as somebody who was a horrifically bad penalty taker, I have nothing to say on the matter, to be honest with you. And just the mere fact that it stepped up is a lot better than anything I've ever done before. Because let it be known, the only time I was in a penalty shootout was for England under 21s, and I was actually number 11. So if you need any guidance from me, I think you're very much missing the point, Dan. So I refer back to you in the studio, because Ali Moreno has the technique and the mentality, apparently.
No, he doesn't either.
So please, Ali,
he's behind you, he's number 12 somehow.
That's outside my kind of range, Nate.
It's too far away. Disappointing overall then for Japan, Gab, obviously, to go out in this manner, but overall a successful tournament considering they made it through to the knockout stages in a group with Spain and Germany.
Look, overall has to be a successful tournament getting this far. It is a really, really big deal for them. That said, I don't know. I throughout this tournament, I look at their manager, Hajime Moriyasu, and I can't figure out whether this guy's a genius or whether this guy hit his head, because so many of his more talented players, like Kaoru Mitoma, like Minamino, okay, obviously not in form, but if the guy who's been there, done that, he would leave them on the bench, he changes lineup, he changes formation again, moving to the back three again. Every game this seemed to happen, then he'd make a load of subs. I guess it's a different way of approaching it. It's trying to, I suppose, you know, with the five substitutes saying, I'm going to use them, I'm going to exploit it to the max. There were times when it worked, and there were, I think, also other times when I think, you know, he's going to look back on it as a missed opportunity to have his best guys out there for as long as possible.
So, Japan out, Croatia through. The gift for Croatia, of course, is now a clash on Friday against Brazil. According to the bookies, no surprise here, Brazil are 5-1 on to advance. You've got $5 just to win the one. How do you stop Brazil, Nathan?
That is a great question. I think that is a great question. I think for Croatia, I believe they are very good at sort of moving the ball, trying to get ways to control the game. People like Modric getting on the ball is fantastic. But if Brazil manage to put them on the back foot, then I think they'll struggle. But I think Brazil, for as good as they are, they're not perfect. Maybe at times you could maybe get them to overcommit, perhaps. And then maybe you could isolate some of the differentials in terms of the Brazilians at the back. You know, Thiago Silva's a great player, but he's 38 years old, you know, something like that. He's even older than me, and I'm retired already. Obviously, I'm comparing myself to Thiago Silva. But anyway, moving on. I think for Brazil, they aren't perfect. And you saw in the group stages that they did, you know, you saw in the group stages that they weren't perfect overall. They could make changes and things didn't necessarily go the way that they wanted. They can score goals, but there's no guarantee that they will score goals. And I think for Croatia, they have to make sure that they're solid, make sure that their tight defensive structure's in play. And they might forego a bit of possession, but they can still kind of control certain elements of the game without necessarily being on the ball. And then the longer you can frustrate Brazil, the more jeopardy exists, because you know that one goal may be all that you need from that match in itself. I think you look at the way, say, Cameroon beat Brazil, and obviously there were changes within that, but it was what I don't think Cameroon necessarily deserved to win the game per se, but it still came away with 3 points from that match. And I think if you look at Croatia, they're a team who've made it to the final, a team who believe that they can be going further along. And as the manager said, people seem to continually underestimate them, even though they seem to be going further and further in these tournaments. So I think for that, it's just about staying solid, not offering too much to Brazil and becoming open, because if you do become open, they will tear you apart. Yes, that Brazil probably have the better players overall, but the fact is it's still 11 versus 11. And in Croatia, they have the experience to be able to step forward and offer a game plan of just soaking up a bit of pressure, but then making sure that when the moments are there to attack, they attack in a structured way and don't leave themselves open as they go forward.
I'm concerned about Croatia's fitness. And it's not only today's game against Japan and the fact that you went into extra time and the stress levels of this particular game. I'm going back to the game against Belgium. That was a stressful match as well. And had it not been for a Lukaku sort of shocker, they probably wouldn't even be in the competition. Regardless, my point is, stressful match, emotional match against Belgium. Stressful match, emotional match against Japan. And now, you go and play against Brazil 3 days from now, and guess what? Brazil just had a training session.
Right.
And they rested most of the starters in the last game of the group stage. So you're talking about, in terms of just fitness and fitness alone, a much, much fresher team in Brazil than what you have in Croatia. We also saw from Croatia today that when Modric got tired, then Kovacic got tired, Brozovic, now you're taking players off the field, and Perisic is off the field, and so is Kovacic, and so is Modric, and you're thinking, the reason you take those guys off the field, while it is a brave decision, is because they're having difficulties moving around. And they're having difficulties chasing around. Guess what they're going to have to do against Brazil? Move around and chase around. The fitness for Croatia will be a major, major part of this game. And chasing Brazil is not easy to do in the best of circumstances, and these are not the best of circumstances for Croatia.
Speaking then of exhausted and emotional, it is Nadim's final day in Qatar. Shaka Hislop will be there to take the baton from it. How has it been for you, Nadim?
Yeah, it's been absolutely incredible. I feel very privileged to have been here, firstly at a World Cup, but secondly with ESPN as well. Some really good guys in the ESPN team, as everyone probably knows from watching and listening to the show. I can confirm it's good. The football's good. Oh, did I score a goal? Oh, my God. There's a shot. But, yeah, I've had a fantastic time getting the chance to go and getting the chance to go and watch some games. Like, I love football. So to be seeing some of the best players in the world playing in some of the best stadiums in the world and seeing fan bases from all fan bases from all around the world, and not just like if I was covering England back home, you only see one type of fan and they're usually quite drunk and over the top. But now you see fans who sort of love the game for a different way. Like there's a studio next door and the media, they've been banging on the walls and singing songs. You know, you get a real sense of the passion of how football is from more than just saying the place in England where I'm at. And it's been a real eye-opener. ESPN have really looked after me. Gab's been great, everyone's been great, producers have been great, the shows have been good, and I'm just going to let this one be out there. You know, it's just a shame we didn't have rights, because unfortunately people had to watch that other channel, but you know, they came over here to get their stuff afterwards.
Why was Jules in like every picture that we saw? Like, was he man-marking you, or like, was he trying to live off your stardust a little bit?
Well, Jules likes to test himself, so he stepped up to the big dog, didn't he? But yeah, it was been very fun.
Who have you
Thanks
developed a bigger
and don't
bromance
worry, Shaq will
with?
Be here, so he can get your enjoyment.
Who's your bigger bromance with, Seb
bigger?
Or Jules?
Hayden. It's different. It's different. So they're both older than me, but Seb is as if he's like an 18-year-old brother, whereas Jules is the 42-year-old man that he is that just wants somebody to walk along with him somewhere. So it's two completely different things, but nonetheless, it's been fun. They're both harmless, so yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Thank you.
They're both harmless. What a compliment. Nadim, great stuff. It's been fantastic to have you with us over the last couple of weeks. Be sure to have a safe journey back. Just a reminder then, Shaka Hislop will be live in Qatar from tomorrow. Be sure to join us as we'll be reflecting on those two final round of 16 ties. If you ever miss a show, you can download our daily podcast, which is available over on the website. Some bonus material normally snuck in there as well, so be sure to check it out.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
ESPN FC on ESPN Plus is presented by the all-new Honda CR-V Hybrid. Ooh, Morocco, Spain tomorrow, which could be an interesting tie. Spain, as you would expect, favourites 4-1 on, though. Seems rather long considering Morocco 3-1. They've impressed us so far. Let's get some analysis from a Spanish point of view, because I think Nadim's already been kicked out alongside Gab Marcotti. Now, Gemma Soler is there to look ahead to the tie. We're just giving this graphic up, I believe, when we just set up Gemma.
Oh.
Is she there?
Okay. Are we hoping she's there?
No.
No.
Oh, Ali, great. Ali, how do you think this game's going to go?
No. Gemma's here.
Hey!
Gemma's here.
There's Gemma.
Gemma's here.
Hola,
Gemma. ¿Cómo estás? ¿Qué tal todo en el Mundial de Copa?
La Copa Mundial.
Oh, I knew I should have just stopped.
Oh, come on, Dan.
That's
come on,
Spanish.
Dan.
Igual, it's going well so far. We are missing you so much, as always. But today I feel a little bit nervous because Spain tomorrow has a very tough game, and you don't know what is walking this this waterfront and ordering a coffee or food or whatever when everyone asks you where you're from, Spain. We're gonna kick you out because absolutely everyone here, Qatar, Iran, Saudi Arabia, all the Middle East, Africans and Asians are now going with Morocco.
And Morocco, a team that have grown into this tournament.
Yes, they have. And they present some real issues for Spain. The transition of Morocco can be very quick at times, and Spain struggles in those transitions defensively. Morocco has also proven that they have defended very well. And what we saw from Spain in the game against Japan is when somebody puts numbers behind the ball, they find difficulties in terms of creating opportunities. And even when they create those opportunities, they haven't been able, outside of the game against Costa Rica, they haven't been able to put those chances away. You imagine that the chances are not gonna be all that many against Morocco. And so, where does Spain create those opportunities? And when they do create those opportunities, who's putting the chance away? Which was a question that we had coming into the tournament and was sort of put to the side after the Costa Rica game and say, hey, well, if this game, if this team can score 7 goals against Costa Rica, they can score goals. But can they? Will they? Those are big questions for Spain going into this match against Morocco.
Yeah, obviously the start against Costa Rica, perfect. But then we have seen weaknesses in this Spanish side, Gemma. Back at home, what are the big criticisms towards Spain and what we've seen in those last two matches?
Probably it's the lack of efficiency in both areas, especially the final third. There is quite a lot of criticism regarding Morata, Ferran Torres as well, and that lack of creating clear opportunities, and when they have, as Ali was mentioning, when you're gonna have few chances in knockout stages of the World Cup, so you really have to be efficient there. And also with the goalkeeper, there are concerns that have always been in the last seasons with Unai Simón, and once again, especially in that defeat. So there are concerns because when you concede 2 goals in 10 minutes against Japan, of course, I think you have to be a little bit worried.
How do you see this game going, Gab?
I mean, I think it's the kind of thing with Luis Enrique. I don't understand what he does. I just know that it's brilliant. I feel like he's some kind of genius that I don't fully understand. And sometimes he's a little too clever. I mean, what we saw against Japan, that was a self-destruction, in my opinion. When he doesn't start Morata, when you've got people who can hit a through ball like Gavi and Pedri, that seems strange to me because he gives you that verticality. I think in a game like this, there's going to be a lot of emotion out there. You've got players like Ashraf Hakimi, who, you know, are essentially Spanish, you know, coming up against guys that he grew up with. So I think there's a lot of elements to it. I wouldn't be so sure that Morocco's simply going to sit and play on the counter. I think they have players like Buffal, like Ziyech, who can certainly go and create something out of nothing. And in fact, I don't think it would be right for them to sit when you've got people like Mazraoui and Ashraf Hakimi, who are so devastating going forward.
What's your pick then, Gab?
I have to go with Spain, but man, it's not a strong yes on Spain from me.
Gab says definitely Spain. Ali?
Not nearly as definite as Gab, but I'm going to take Spain as well. And I'm expecting a big performance from my favorite player, Pedri. That's my guy.
Yep.
And I have to find from him, much like the Barcelona fans want to find from him, consistency being a threat in the final third. Because if you're not going to create chances with whomever plays through the middle, those chances are going to have to be created by the guys underneath. And Pedri has to be part of that story. He has to be a player and a threat inside the 18-yard box. Maybe he needs a trailing runner. Maybe he finishes a chance. And maybe that's all Spain needs. I'm going to take Spain.
Gemma?
I have to take Spain, of course. As I was mentioning, I have a lot of concerns. Pedri was the main actor earlier today in the press conference. He's well aware that he will be much more studied than, for example, the last Euros, and that half of the team of Morocco, as Gabs was mentioning, they were born in Europe, and a lot of the key players are born in Spanish football academies, so they know them very well. And I'm concerned as well, because in that game against Croatia, they suffocated so much. Very nice midfield of Croatia, that Modric, Brozovic, Kovacic, they were able to take the oxygen out of them. So I think they will try to do the same with favorite Alex player Pedri. My favorite, I have to say, is Gavi. I think if Spain are able to do their game, and their game is that Luis Enrique's idea, for me, Spain is probably the most created by a manager team in this whole tournament. If they are able to play something similar that what they want, they will win, definitely. Otherwise, if it's a very dog face game, can I say a cara de perro? It's what we say in Spain. If it's a dog face game, then I see it's hardly they can get a result.
Scrappy. Scrappy.
It's not dog face?
No, but I like dog face.
Oh, okay.
I
mean,
that's good. I could have translated that, no problem. Don't worry.
You had it.
Gemma, what happens then when Spain lose tomorrow? Do you go home straight away with them?
What?
No, I have my ticket for the 20, so we are going to stay. Not because only Spain will go through, but also because we have 2 days of rest days soon, and I've been told there are good karaoke here in Doha.
Yes.
So we have to try them with all the crew,
of course. Oh, goodness me. Let's hope your Doha voice is better than your Barcelona voice,
what?
Gemma.
I'm sorry, what?
Of course. The other remaining game will see Portugal take on Switzerland. And I know this will surprise you. I know it's a massive shock. But all the talk going into this tie from a Portugal perspective has been about Cristiano Ronaldo. Of course,
no.
Was not happy when he was substituted in that final game of the group stages. And Fernando Santos has addressed that, saying, "Have I already watched the footage? Yes. I didn't like it. Didn't like it at all. From there, it's things you sort out internally. It was sorted out this way. And now we think about the game tomorrow. Everyone is focused on the game." He didn't commit, Ali. He didn't say whether or not Ronaldo was going to start this game.
Okay, come on, Dan. I know you have to ask a question. I know this is what we do. But there's no chance. There is no chance. And I mean, zero chance that Ronaldo not only starts for this team, but is this team's captain.
Why doesn't he just say it then?
Huh?
Why leave it in the air?
Well, I would ask this as well. Why is he even saying, "Oh, I watched it and I didn't like
it
at all"?
Because he's upset, Ali, and that's why he's going to drop Ronaldo.
Oh, right. Okay, then. Then do something about it, Fernando Santos. If only there was somebody in a position who could do something about it. Guess what? Nobody has done something about Ronaldo's attitude for the last 20 years. Fernando Santos is not about to start in the round of 16 match against Switzerland. It's not happening. Ronaldo will start. Ronaldo will be the captain. And if Portugal is to win, maybe Ronaldo has to score.
There was a poll, apparently, in Portugal. Who knows who took part in this poll, Gab, saying that 70% of the fans don't want him starting.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, look, it's one of those online polls. I don't know. Maybe a bunch of United fans logged on to the Ebola website. I genuinely don't know. Or maybe it's those Messi fans, those Cristiano haters. Look, I agree with Ali. He's got to start, given the context, given what he means, given the Fernando Santos's relationship with him, the way he's always backed him, always supported him. You know, it would seem pretty petty if at this stage he didn't start him. You know, if you were going to make a change, if you're going to think about using Cristiano differently, the time to do it was before the tournament. Find different solutions. At this stage, for me, 100%, Cristiano has to start.
We're on the Ronaldo topic. Let's talk about that before we get the predictions for the game. $200 million a year to play in Saudi Arabia. He's going to sign January 1st. Gav, that's what we're hearing, isn't it?
That's what they're reporting in Spain. I got to say, I've got my, skeptic big boy hat on for a number of reasons. First of all, $200 million is just completely out of whack. Exactly. Yeah, that's the one I borrowed from you. Look,
hey!
Listen.
There it is.
At some point. The man has all the money that he needs. So 200 million, 150 million, 80 million, it makes no difference. This reminds me of when David Beckham signed for the Galaxy, and the Galaxy very cleverly told everybody, look, he's going to make 50 million a year. It's a publicity stunt, right? Beckham did not make 50 million a year. We now found out that we found out the truth. And I think it's similar. Will he make a ton of money if he goes? Sure. Tell you what, I don't think he's going to go. There is no reason whatsoever for Cristiano to commit right now to Al Nassr. This thing that it's a done deal. Why? Why Russia? Why would George Mendes go and sign now? What, you think Al Nassr is going to withdraw their offer on January 1st? The man is unattached right now. He can pick his spots. Personally, maybe it's just a wish. I think we're still going to see him in the Champions League, whether it's Sporting Lisbon, whether it's somewhere else. I just can't see him just riding off into the desert like this. And I certainly don't believe he has actually made an actual binding commitment.
Gavin, his big boy hat for a while, has said that he doesn't see why Real Madrid don't go in for him, Gemma, and make that move. Any chance?
I don't think so. If something has proven Real Madrid is that they don't like second parts of a love story, and they don't like to make it very long either. So I don't see any chance of that unless his economic pretensions were almost symbolic, and there was another marketing / economic opportunity for both of them. Otherwise, if they didn't want him at the beginning of the season, where we still didn't know how could he be performing in Man United, why would they pick him now? It's not like that. They know this player. It's not that kind of player that he will be happy sitting in the bench waiting for Benzema to get tired to have his opportunity. So for me, I think it would be a very strange operation for Real Madrid as far as we know the Blancos.
Right, that is our anti-Ronaldo contractual obligation fulfilled. Let's focus now then, shall we, on the game. Portugal against Switzerland. I think out of all of them, this is one of the hardest to call, isn't it? I thought Croatia was going to be tight, and this one's going to be tight as well.
It is, and especially if Switzerland allows themselves to actually showcase what they can do in the field in the manner in which they did against Serbia. Now, in order to do that, they also expose themselves defensively, and they show to be vulnerable defensively. I hope that Switzerland comes out and plays, and I hope that they actually are willing to take some chances going forward, because I do think that they can trouble Portugal defensively. I think there are vulnerabilities defensively for Portugal. But if Switzerland just decides to, you know what, we're just going to drop off, we're going to absorb pressure, and this is how we're going to win this game, then I'm all Portugal all the time. I think Portugal has too much talent in the attacking half, and eventually we're going to see big performances, individual performances, whether that's Bruno, whether that's Ronaldo, whether that's Rafael Leao coming off the bench. They just have too much going on forward. I think Portugal wins this match.
Gemma, who are you taking?
I'm taking Portugal because they have so much talent. My concerns is about the managing this talent, if Fernando Santos will be again brave enough to sit, if it's necessary, Cristiano Ronaldo in the minute 60, if the game really needs it. But there is a lot of talent there, so I'll go with Portugal.
Gap.
I'm going Portugal 100%. I'll tell you what, if Switzerland do sit back and Cristiano starts, that's a really dumb way to play against Cristiano, because it means Cristiano's sitting there in the area waiting for balls to come in, and he's up against Shar or whoever, and Akanji. I like my Cristiano chances there. So we know there's been issues with Portugal and whatever else, but just top to bottom, I think they are too strong. And with regard to the Serbia game, in the end, this is the Portugal team that, conceded two goals in the first half against the Serbia side that really were a bit of a mess. So I think Switzerland, all right, all props to them. We unsung heroes, blah, blah, blah. But I think the run ends right here.
Thank you very much, Gab. Stay with us. Gab will be with us for extra time. Gemma, we'll say thank you very much to you. Good luck to Spain, of course, tomorrow. Just a reminder, the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast is available now. Be sure to go over to the website and check it out.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. 10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Away from the World Cup, the FA Cup replays take place on Wednesday. Stockport County against Charlton. Gillingham then on Thursday take on Dalyman Redbridge. You can check out those games here live on Plus. That is it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Fear not, though. Extra time is next. Gab is back. We haven't heard from Gab for a while. I'm sure he's got some long anecdotes that we can all enjoy about the World Cup. Ali's staying with us as well. This is FC Extra Time, brought to you by Globen. Hello, welcome into the ESPN FC studios. Ali with me here.
Hey.
Gab Marcotti as hey. Well. It's been a while. Gab, how are you?
What? I'm good. I was expecting the extra time music.
This is the extra time music. You can't hear it.
Oh, okay. Sorry. My bad. There oh, you go.
Oh, there he is. Uh-huh. Look at that.
Oh, the shoulder bump. Yeah. I see. Oh, look at him.
What does the balcony overlook, Gab? What's behind you there?
Behind me is the corniche, which is kind of like the boardwalk. You know the boardwalk in Atlantic City? This is the Doha version, which is in some ways slightly different from AC, but there's a big fan zone, and we're right next to Saudi House. You know, bucket loads of fun there. So it's where a lot of people come and gather, especially in the evenings after the sunsets, because during the day it's very hot.
Oh, last time I was on a boardwalk was on Western Super Mare Alley, okay. Which is a seaside attraction in England, which I imagine is slightly different to what Gab is talking about.
Do you want to tell us about that, Dan?
No donkey rides in the background on many machines. For Gab, what's one thing you've loved about being in Qatar for the World Cup, and what's one thing you haven't really enjoyed much?
So one thing I've really liked about this World Cup, I'll give you two quick things. One is the lack of travel, flying around to city. It is taxing and it is a colossal time suck. The other thing is a lot of the people that you meet, I know it sounds cheesy or so on, but relative to Russia, where a lot of normal people, their kind of like general setting is a bit burly-esque. You know, it's kind of set to grumpy most of the time. Here, everybody's smiling. Everybody's really, really kind and helpful. So I really enjoyed that aspect of it. One thing I haven't liked, and I think that I see this creeping into World Cups, these fans who dress up wearing like weird clothes and whatnot. And I'm kind of thinking, when did this start? I don't remember this from World Cups growing up. You know, I guess it's people mugging for the cameras and whatever, and let me go and dress like a weirdo. You know, like, it's one thing if, you know, you're from Ghana, you wear your colors, you're Brazil or whatever, that's fine. But you see people wearing these weirdo costumes. I'm like, it's not Halloween. It's a football match. I'm just reminded how the World Cup is football, but it's not the kind of football we talk about every day on FC, where we talk about club football. This is something completely different.
Are you passive-aggressively having a go at Jules and his football shirt collection there? Gab, we talk about fancy dress.
No, look, guys wearing football shirts, fine. You know, you're going to a football match, you want to wear a replica kit, that's fine. They got no issue with it. But seriously, I've seen people dressed like dinosaurs. I've seen all sorts of cosplay here. I've seen people, saw a guy dressed as a toothbrush in, you know, decked out in the Polish colors. And I'm thinking to myself, why? What is this? You want to be on, you know, a lot of the fans you meet here at the World Cup, I suspect, are not fans who go to football matches regularly, week in, week out. I think these are people, they treat it like the Monaco Grand Prix, they treat it like the Kentucky Derby, whatever. You know, they're here for the event, and that's fine. It's just different. That's all I'm saying.
I thought he would have said the fact that his building flooded, that would have
been... Well, yes, because the interesting thing is, Gab, you're in the posh building at the penthouse, yes? Well, like, Jules is slumming it with Mark Ogden, yes. We know Nadim's with Sam. But you've had some issues in your building. Mm.
That's right. We have a rooftop pool. We have multiple rooftop pools, actually, which are actually closed to the public. And now they say it is nothing to do with the pools. But,
we don't have any riffraff associating in the pool.
So much water. So much water came down. I think I shared a video of like some poor guy, like he couldn't open. He says there's water coming out of his apartment. He couldn't open the door to his apartment because of the water pressure coming the other way. So that was an event. Fortunately, I'm on the 9th floor and all this stuff was happening up in the 30s. So I wasn't affected.
Do you have kind of a fear of missing out thing going on, seeing all the love that Seb and Jules and Nadim have had, Gab?
Well, I see Jules almost every day here at the set, so I generally have my Jules fit. No, look, I'm in a building with all these Argentina fans, some of our colleagues from ESPN Argentina. I've got the legendary Oscar Ruggeri in my building. I have Hercules Gomez across the hall. What more could I want?
Wow. Standard is low.
And by the way, it's you know. No. I just want to point this out. When people give me stick for the fact that, you know, I'm in the so-called posh building, right? Seb and Herc are together all the time, right? Did Herc want to be with Seb in his time off? No. He's with me in my building. So, you know, draw your own conclusions.
Hey, life is made of choices, I suppose. I don't know that there was a winning choice there for Herc.
For all, should Real Madrid sign Richarlison as their eventual long-term Benzema replacement?
No. I think Real Madrid are in the market for something else.
Right.
And Richarlison has been great for Brazil and has been really productive, and he works perfectly within this group. I think Real Madrid will be looking for a different profile of player.
Here we go. Time to upset Spurs fans. Oh. Do you think this World Cup will see him get a move to a big club, Gab?
Oh, there we go. That'll do it.
Spurs fans, he's obviously already at a big club. I think, I don't know if Richarlison views Tottenham as a stepping stone or whatever, but I think even Tottenham fans would recognize that Real Madrid are kind of in a different stratosphere, possibly to every other club in the world. But I think the days when players were judged on what they could do in World Cups, those are long gone. If Richarlison gets a move, it's going to be based on what he does week in, week out in the Premier League. And I might add, as wonderful as he is for Brazil, let's not forget, this guy isn't an automatic choice in Tottenham starting 11. When everybody's fit, we've seen Conte, you know, preferring Kulusevski or Son to him. So, you know, I still think there is a ways to go in terms of anointing him as a Real Madrid caliber center forward.
What's the ceiling for Vinicius? Before we, how good was his finish today? Because I thought, why is he taking so long?
Right, and so in order to answer that, you have to sort of go back to a year and a half ago, where maybe he would have taken just as long, but it's because he was having difficulties trapping the ball. Because he was maybe thinking about how am I going to finish this, overthink it, overdo it, and now the chance is gone. Or maybe he takes it first time and puts it into the 20th row, which we have seen him do in the past. But over the last 18 months or so, the improvement has been very, very clear, very evident. And what we saw today from Vini Jr. was confidence. I trust that I'm going to take a good first touch. I trust that I'm going to get my head up. And I trust that I'm just going to massage this ball into the back of the net. That is a player who knows what he's doing on the field, and he's allowing his body to take over in moments where he needs to execute. And just as good was the goal, the ball to Paquetá.
Yeah.
Everybody's crashing the near post. Everybody's crashing into the penalty post, the penalty spot, and the middle of the goal. And he just calmly, again, I cannot stress this enough, calmly, just flipping the ball over to Paquetá. The trailing run, beautifully done, outside of the right foot. His ceiling continues to get higher and higher, because with every game he shows us more evidence that he continues to get better.
Gab, how many times have you heard these sort of jokes? As we take a look at the next tweet, your thoughts on Italy not getting into the last eight?
Oh, no.
The answer's the same, right? I'd argue that when you have four World Cups at home, unless you're Brazilian, right? Shut up. If four World Cups at home, it's good to let somebody else have a go. We're not selfish like Germany. They also have four at home, right? And they said, nine, we need to get more, we need to get more. And they show up for the second straight tournament. They go home in the first round, right? They go home with the Wales. You know what? Good for you, Germany. Glad you enjoyed it. It's another 4 years where, you know, we can say only Brazil has won more World Cups than Italy.
I think they've got four at home, haven't they, Germany, Gab?
Which means they have not won more World Cups than Italy. That's four.
Why did
four.
You say nine?
They're equal. I'd much rather not. I see what you did there.
Okay,
no,
second
seriously,
part of the...
Listen, I'd much rather not go to the World Cup than come to a World Cup and be humiliated with a first-round exit, two World Cups in a row. And I speak from experience, because Italy had World Cups exits in 2010 and 2014.
See, you've wound him up now, this tweet. On a serious note, Gab, who has been the best player of the tournament so far, considering the fact that you do not always go with the public's choice?
Oh, it's a... You ask me questions where I actually have to think about it? I think Messi was really good in the last couple games. But you want somebody offbeat from me, so I know. So... Vardiol, I think, has been really good in the Croatian defense.
They're
Does
out.
That count as the offbeat choice? I need to think about it.
Well, there you are. See? You're less contrarian this World Cup.
Yeah. Croatia are still in it.
Oh, yeah, they are. I've already got Brazil knocking them out. No,
they're still in it.
On that subject, Dan, one for you. What will you do if England make the final and play Brazil? Mm. Is your happiness more important than your significant other? My wife being Brazilian, of course.
Well,
it could seize us.
Answer this very carefully, Dan.
No, England.
I don't.
Yeah.
You don't care about...
Well, okay, so if Brazil wins, that's good because she'll be happy. So right. She's happy, that makes my life easier. And if England win, I'm happy because England have won. So everyone's a winner.
No, not Brazil is not a winner.
Well, I'm a winner, either way. I think that's where we're going with this. That's the main thing. Beautiful. Gab, thank you very much. Been great to have you on. Ali, thank you as well. ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow to reflect on Spain against Morocco. Portugal taking on Switzerland as well. Be sure to join us then.